Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and my co-host, Canucks Insider Thomas Drancer. Drancer also covers the team for The Athletic.
Hello.
There you go. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them online at DLEAMC.com. It's true. They're great.
They rule.
They're awesome. Shout out to Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet. What are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. A big Wednesday show, as always. First edition of the crossover in a couple of weeks. We'll see if we can match the unhinged energy of our chat with Taylor on Friday, because that was a true highlight for me. I enjoyed that very much.
Did you make sure not to wear a shirt with buttons today? Because I sure did.
Oh, so we wouldn't comment on how far unbuttoned they were? No, I actually didn't think about that, but that's funny.
Don Taylor's long war with chest hair enters its 10th year.
I did make a charcuterie board on the weekend.
Did you?
I was like, man, I'm in the mood now. After all that charcuterie talk with
Super
Taylor.
Fair.
So we'll do the crossover in a few minutes.
How
here.
Do you think Rick Dhaliwal pronounces charcuterie, and should we find out?
Ooh, Lunchables, that's how.
Yeah. Hey, you know what, Tom? I got to hand it to you. That was a good joke. I do, in fact, have to hand it to Tom. So that's coming up at 12:10. Jason Bukala will join us at 1.
Books.
Always a pleasure with Bukala. And, of course, it's Canucks game day, so we'll do the whiteboard a little bit later on in the show. Now, do want to start off the show here just acknowledging what is the major story in the NHL happening right now. I'm sure most of our listeners have heard about it or read about it, but just to catch everyone up, per a Globe and Mail report, 5 players from the 2018 Canadian World Junior Hockey Team have been told by London police, of course, London, Ontario police, to turn themselves in. This is in connection with, of course, allegations of a sexual assault in June of 2018 in London. Now, also in the last few days, 5 players who are on that team have been granted leaves of absences from their various professional teams, 4 in the NHL, 1 playing overseas. Dylan Dubé, Carter Hart, Michael McLeod, Cal Foote, and Alex Formenta. Now, I want to stress, no charges have been laid. And even on those 5 players taking leave, we don't have any specific information about why those players have taken leave, right? There's an element of connecting the dots here, but I want to be very, very careful of what we do know, what we don't know at this point. So again, no charges have been laid. Official word from London police about this matter, from the Globe. No official word on the identity of the 5 players that, as per the Globe and Mail report, have been asked to turn themselves in. So that's the kind of update. It's not a happy story. It's not a fun story, obviously, but it is a really important one. So I wanted to relay that while also stressing what we don't know at the moment. And also, of course, assure you that as there are more developments here, like, I know it's not exactly, you know, we're Canucks Talk. This is not per se a Canucks story, but we're also a hockey show, and this is a big hockey story. So as there are further developments, as there are more things we do know and can say for certain about this story, we will pass them along. But that is that's the latest on this matter. And of course, Drance, this is something that's been percolating in the NHL. You know, every time Gary Bettman or Colin Campbell is in front of a microphone, they get asked about it, rightfully so, because it is such a big story. As much as it is a bad news story and not fun to talk about, is also something that I hope for everyone involved, in particular the person making the allegations, that there is closure, there's a finality, hopefully sooner rather than later, to this story.
Yeah, and does sound like the story is now advancing again.
Yeah.
And we'll know more soon and keep our listeners abreast.
All right. Never an easy way to transition out of something like that and get back to talking about the Canucks. And as I mentioned, it is a game day, but we will do our best and we'll bring in the boys from Donnie and Dolly in a few minutes here. Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal will join us. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, so you can get your thoughts in. Canucks game day. And I think the big question here, and this is so fascinating because it wasn't that long ago where the lotto line was the toast of the town, right, driving them to kind of true contender status. And since then, the lotto line's performance has fallen off, but the team's hasn't.
Well,
the team's hasn't at all. The team has just kept winning.
And the stuff that we saw from the lotto line on that road trip that we liked, right, this harbinger of a team that's actually playing like a contender, a lot of that's remained true, even as their 5-on-5 game hasn't been driving it. It's just that, you know, what you've been getting from the third and the fourth line, you know, overwhelming the Toronto Maple Leafs, what you've been getting from the Pugh-Suter line, right, has been at such a high level that this team's still playing their best hockey, even if their top end isn't necessarily carrying the mustard, right? Which isn't to say, like, you know, the underlying numbers aren't great, but I don't think they're playing poorly or anything. It's not like they're giving up a ton of goals against. It's not like they're costing the Canucks in any meaningful way.
Let's put it this way. If Rick Tocchet decides to split them up tonight, I think that's totally defensible. But I also don't think you look at this and say, well, you can never put them back together again, right?
No.
But you know what I mean? It hasn't been like, this isn't working at all. This is a disaster.
I still do want to see it coming out of the All-Star break. That game against Carolina on the road, that game against Boston, I still want to see what it looks like in those types of environments, right? Because to me, we're sort of in this, like, taking a breath. You know what I mean? This is like an inhalation week, right? You've got... very low stakes games, all at home, relatively spaced out. It's not even condensed from a Canucks perspective. They're gonna win, you know. I would think at least one of the next two. Probably pick up points in both. They should anyway. And this is not like proving time. I liked seeing Myers and Hughes together the other night because this is a good time to experiment.
This is tinkering time.
Totally.
Yeah.
This is see what you got time. This is manage the minutes in a balanced fashion time. This is get to the break without any injury, right? Like, the Canucks could lose the next two, but if there's no further injuries any Canucks players, I think that's a huge dub. Huge dub. One thing, though, about this team, right, is there's been a lot of talk about this new culture, the new competitiveness, the new maturity that we've seen from this group. The Canucks tonight, playing a team called the Blues, decided, no, we are going to be the bluest possible team with a shiny blue helmet.
We're going to out-blues the Blues?
You think you own the color blue? Look at this. Look at this. We are going to ride to the gates of Valhalla dressed in chrome. That's what's up tonight.
They're playing psychological warfare against the St. Louis Blues. Yeah.
The Canucks are like,
we're hijacking your nickname.
We like Eiffel 65 more.
I thought you were going to say, like, we like Muddy Waters more or something. Oh. The actual blues music that the St. Louis Blues are named after. Are you as anti-blues or as you are anti-jazz?
No, I have a little more time for blues because, like, there's more form to it.
Uh-huh.
And I love I love a ton of the singers.
All right.
Right? You've got, like, a lot of, like, really bassy baritone voices singing blues music that I can get behind.
I'm a big blues guy because I played electric guitar in high school, so it's, like, perfect for, like, noodling on electric guitar.
Fair enough.
So, there you go. You know, your point about the kind of maturity on display and
point about the Canucks is war, boys.
The Canucks being more blue than the Blues completely thrown me off. But it is kind of funny with the lotto line discussion here because, and you know, we have somebody texting in, you know, with different line combinations that they might want to see if the lotto line is broken up tonight. And, you know, it involves splitting up the third line, this person's suggestion here. And the funny thing is, like, one of the hardest things about splitting the lotto line up right now is you don't really want to break up the bottom six lines. Like, obviously, the third line you want to keep together the way they've been going. Blueger, Garland, and Joshua, the quote-unquote third line, more like the de facto second line a lot of nights. But even the fourth line, I really like what Oman and Lafferty and Hoglander have been doing. I don't necessarily want to break that up either, right? So you've got so much that is working.
Unless
I'm kind of tempted just to keep a lot of that together.
Unless it's for Pugh Suter.
Right, you bump Pugh Suter down there.
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. unless it's because you've upgraded at second line center and now Pugh Suter's going down.
I don't mean about not making a trade.
No, I know.
I mean if you're just breaking up the lotto line, but rearranging the 12 forwards you have going right now.
You know what, though?
Keep those other three lines together.
I guess, though, it is tinkering time, so I don't really have a problem if we see a new forward formation configuration tonight. What I do want to see is what this team looks like on the road with that loaded top line against those two quality opponents that they'll face coming out of the break. That to me is much more important than how they line up tonight.
Maybe we can do our lineup predictions a little bit later on in the show, but right now, as mentioned, as we do every Wednesday, almost every Wednesday anyways, at this time, it is time for the crossover with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal, the two hosts of Donnie and Dolly, which you can watch every day, Monday to Friday, 10 to noon, on Czech TV. And they join us now. What's going on, fellas? Nice to do this after a couple of weeks apart.
Yeah, it's good to see you guys again.
Nice. Well, Rick was away last week. Yeah. I wasn't.
Why? What do you mean?
Well, no, I did the hit with
Donnie. Did a hit with us. Very graciously, a Friday afternoon.
Hold it a second.
Yeah.
Yeah, hold it a second. I had to do Brett and Ruff in the mornings. That's why.
Look, the forces outside of our control conspired against each other last week, right? The snow, and then Drance was sick.
Exactly.
I mean, it didn't work out. It's all right.
I like, though, like, you know, I always thought that this segment was prone to get off the rails, Dolly, because of you and me. But then we had Donnie on the show, and it went just as far off the rails without you there. So you've been exonerated. You are not the cause of our chaotic group energy. Congratulations to you.
By the way, speaking of our hit with Donnie on Friday, we had somebody who wanted to ask us to ask you, Rick, are you a big charcuterie board fan?
A charcuterie guy? A charcuterie board?
Yeah.
No. Not what?
Do you know what a charcuterie board is?
Of course I know what a charcuterie. You talk about it all the time on the show. I got nothing to do with charcuterie boards. I could care less if five were sitting right in front of me. Why? What's
the? We brought it up last week.
Why?
Thomas brought it up for whatever reason, and I made the point that back in the day, my mom and dad would have people over. They'd throw some Ukrainian sausage, cheese, pickles, and crackers on a plate and serve it, and everybody loved it. Now you can do the same thing, throw it on a piece of wood, and charge
$55.
I think it came up because Rutherford and Aquilini had mentioned in the first meeting, right? They bonded over a charcuterie board at Jim Rutherford's house. I think that's how it came up. Anyways, we don't need to belabor the point too much.
Speaking of an expensive charcuterie board.
Yes, I'm sure that one probably costs more than $55.
Tough segue.
Game day tonight, Canucks and the Blues. And I think a lot of the speculation around this, I was just saying before you guys got on, it's remarkable. The team keeps winning, even though there are some of these questions creeping back in about the performance of the lotto line. What do you guys think we see tonight, and what do you think they should do? Is it time to split this up and have another look at some different line combinations?
You know, you said something that we didn't bring up on our show. What does it mean for the other lines, which have been pretty good? And I guess, you know, with the so-called second line, maybe just for one game, it was pretty good. I got the feeling, I don't know, guys, all along, I don't know, looking back to the road trip, I got the feeling that right off the bat that Rick Tocchet wasn't a big fan of this. And maybe he was convinced to do it, and then they ended up producing so well that they had to stick with it. So I wouldn't be surprised for a second, just by what he says, little hints in his body language whenever he talks about that lotto line, I wouldn't be surprised if they weren't together tonight.
Guys, the Canucks feel they love their center depth. They love the fact they're a strong team up in the middle of the ice. You can move Suter to the wing. Then you're going to have Miller, Pettersson, Bluger, and Amon. I think they're happy with that. I think they really like being strong up the middle of the ice. And look, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? Pettersson goes to center. Now you got a great 1-2 combo up the middle of the ice. And you know what? I have no issues with it. And if Kuzmenko starts doing Kuzmenko things, and then, you know, and all of a sudden Pettersson's winger is now a whole lot better than he was before, and maybe things settle down and they can go back to their old ways. But apparently they're having a meeting today, and they're going to decide before tonight's game if they're going to break them up or not.
Is that a meeting, Rick, with the players or with the, like, internally the organization?
Well, I don't know.
The coaching staff.
Is going to Tocchet said they're going to have a meeting this afternoon to decide if they're going to keep the lotto.
It's such a strange situation. They're winning, right?
They're winning.
They're winning, and I guess they feel things aren't perfect even though they're winning. And, you know, that looks like they're going to at least discuss breaking up their best line. Just strange.
Rick, in terms of the big line, that JT Miller, Pettersson, Besser group working or not, you know, does it have implications for what this club could target at the deadline? Like, could the performance of this line sway Rutherford, Alvin, and company to pursue a top six winger versus a top six center in the months ahead?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. That's why I told you off the top, they really like their strength up the middle of the ice. It really leads me to believe they're going to get a winger, you know. And when Canucks scouted Ottawa and Montreal last night, look who's in that game, guys. Sean Monahan, Tarasenko, Claude Giroux, this Jack Eye guy, Donnie, he's in there. You know, all these guys.
That was good. That was good. That was perfect.
That's a tough one,
guys,
too.
We spent half an hour today trying to figure out how to pronounce his name.
How close was Rick to Xerox at the start?
I was told to keep an eye on this Arbor guy, so I showed.
That's what we got.
That's what we got. So I showed Donnie his last name because I was going to butcher it 100%. And Donnie said Jack Eye. That's what he called him, Arbor Jack Eye.
They're trolling you at this point, Rick.
What are you laughing at?
Is that right?
Is it Jack Eye?
I'm just saying. I feel like there's at least a 50-50 shot that various sources are leaking to you the hardest to pronounce names in the NHL as Canucks targets. Just
purely
to see how you do.
Russian, Eastern European names.
Hey, I'm an honest guy, so I came to work. I showed Donnie the last name, and I said, Donnie, look, I've got a snowball's chance in hell. And Donnie said, it's Jack Eye.
Yeah, well, the first time I noticed him is when, and it's Zach Cassian's birthday today. Oh. Remember him?
Yeah.
Like
he's a tough kid.
Doing a number on Zach Cassian was last year. Yeah,
that's right.
In Montreal, he's tough. Ooh.
So, anyways, Canucks scouting Ottawa, Montreal. There's a multitude of guys on both teams the Canucks could go after. Mm. I was told right now though that Sean Monahan's not on their list, but these lists are always subject change. Yep. You guys know that we got a long time to go before the trade deadline. But there was a lot of guys in Ottawa, Montreal game. The Canucks could be potentially after, right, guys?
What do you
think? And Arbor Jack Eye, I believe, is one of them.
We're back to him.
What do you think, Rick? Because a lot of the forward names you mentioned there, UFAs, you know, Tarasenko, Sean Monahan, do you think they have a preference? Are they willing to go the rental route, or would they rather try to look for somebody with at least one more year term left after this one?
Well, that's where they got to sit down as a group, and is every deal. And Thomas would know this. Every deal is different, you know. Guys with term, guys without terms, the UFAs, all these guys. What are you willing to give up? You know, and that's going to be the great big thing that we're going to find out in this city heading up to the deadline. Is are the Canucks willing to take term? Are they willing to? You know, everyone talks about Gensel. Well, last time I checked, guys, his July 1st price is pretty high, and you know he's overperforming his $30 million deal. How the heck would you? Let's say his agent. I'm just guessing. He wants $7-8 million. How do you get that in Vancouver? Like, how would you possibly get that contract on in Vancouver when Pedersen and Hronek are asking for big money? And then they got seven UFAs, some significant ones, that they can't sign them all. The Canucks, and they keep telling you, and the Canucks are giving you hints in the market when they say guys in Abbotsford have to step up next year. You know why they're saying that? Because they can't re-sign all their UFAs. Mm-hmm. They can't. They just will not simply be in a position to re-sign them all.
Well, maybe it's a one-shot deal, though, right? And then you go and get a guy like Gensel because you don't know if this group's going to be together.
That's true, too.
And they won't be. It won't be together pretty soon. If they feel, hey, look, we got to do it now or never, then they go for a guy, a guy like that. But, guys, how many times, other than Zadorov, which is recent, have the Canucks or any team, have they gone after and obtained a player they were talking about for a long, long time? I'm looking back to JT Miller. I mean, did we know about that?
No, it's just out of the blue.
Like, from what I know, it came out of nowhere. So maybe there's some name out there that not even Rick has mentioned on
Philip Hronek last year as well, right? That was Hronek last year was out of nowhere.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
And Alvin had been monitoring Hronek for quite some time, by the way. That just didn't come up in like 2-3 weeks before that deal. He's liked that player for a long time.
Gentlemen, I'm curious to get your take on this because it wasn't just the Canucks, right, at that Montreal-Ottawa game. I mean, that was about as well-attended a scout section as we've ever seen. You know, when you think about, like, I often think about teams in various moments of their building cycle. And one team that comes to mind is, you know, in 2010, when the Florida Panthers launched their sort of rebuild, right? They traded Nathan Horton and Seidenberg and Greg Campbell to Boston, right? And they traded Chris Higgins, Keith Ballard, and there was one other guy. Chris Higgins, Keith Ballard, anyway, someone else. To Vancouver. Oh, David Booth, yeah, ultimately, but I guess the next year. To Vancouver.
Yeah.
And in some ways, it's like they staffed the rosters, right? Their decision to rebuild and the teams that bought from them staffed the roster of the Stanley Cup finalists that year. I kind of wonder about Ottawa. Like, if Ottawa decides to move someone higher profile, a non-rental type guy, could that be the team, right, that should they change direction pretty dramatically here, staffs the roster? What do you think about that, and is that the type of opportunity? You know, something a little more under the radar in the Philip Hronek mold that this organization should maybe be looking at as opposed to rentals.
Yeah, and look, there's a lot of talented players there as well. Yeah. Well, let's not forget that, because the thinking is with the Ottawa Senators that they were going to do something special, like make the playoffs. This unit just hasn't worked out for them. But no, that's a great point. Beyond Tarasenko and the players that are going to be UFAs, you know, who else is out there? And there's, you know, like a lot of, I mean, this is pie in the sky, but Jake Sanderson's not going anywhere. But there's a lot of great players, like real promising players on that roster. And that's a really good point. I'd forgotten that about Florida. And just the history of trades between the Canucks and Panthers, you know, Thomas, you work there, is lengthy, but I forgot that about the Bruins as well.
And Carson Soucy, guys, his injury makes me wonder, like, you know, where's the Canucks' level of comfort on blue line? Hey, thank goodness, you know, that you got a defenseman like Juleson that was sitting there waiting, you know, and waiting for his opportunity, and he got it. But do the Canucks go out and add one more defenseman? I mean, you just don't know when injuries are going to hit down the stretch in the playoffs. Are there some defensemen? I mean, we hear Chris Tanev's name a lot, but there's nothing imminent there. There's a ton of teams after Chris Tanev. Have fun getting him. That's not going to be a cheap price. I mean, you think they want to send him to a team in their division? And you know, but I will say one thing about Tanev. He loves Vancouver, and he's got a soft spot in his heart for this city. He should never have left. And everybody in this organization absolutely still loves that guy. So, but I'm not hearing anything imminent on Tanev. But, you know, that would be a hard purchase for sure.
I think the city has a soft spot in their heart for Chris Tanev, too. So that's very much a mutual thing.
Big time.
Rick, I'm curious to get your take on this. I've been sort of spitballing on the radio about, should the Canucks add another defenseman? And do you think it makes sense for it to be more of a puck-moving type? Like maybe a more dynamic puck carrier, given, you know, how reliant on what this top pair has been able to do, this team has been. What are your thoughts?
Look at their blue line. It's one of the biggest blue lines in the NHL.
Right.
I give them so much credit to going out and getting, you know, Cole and Soucy and Zadorov and you know, raves about.
It's been a massive
big
turnaround.
Blue lines. They went out and addressed
Vegas.
That. They are so much harder to play against. And the greatest thing about the rough game we had last week, you know, and I can't remember which game it was. It got rough last
Arizona.
Week.
Arizona.
The pushback was incredible. It was Arizona. Yeah. The pushback. Buffalo. How many times, and Donnie and I talk about this all the time, how many times the teams come into Vancouver and say, you know what, that wasn't a hard team to play against. I don't think you can say that anymore about the Canucks, and I think a big part of that is their blue line. And when and they got, by the way, Thomas, they got three UFA defensemen.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what's going to happen there, but their blue line could look totally different next year. And Hronek, his contract's not going to be easy to do, folks.
No.
If you guys think that's an easy contract, you're out to lunch. That one, like Thomas, I don't know when they're going to, how that one ends up getting done. I mean, they're obviously going to have to do it. He is club controlled. But I mean, that blue line could look totally different next year with three UFA defensemen. But I like the size. I like the way they went out and improved that blue line, and it's one of the biggest pluses.
But what Thomas was talking about there, it speaks to what we were just talking about a couple of conversations ago. In that, you know, maybe, you know, when you talk, they got to add some more physicality. They got to add more. Well, maybe it's something that we're not even looking at, like another defenseman who can move the puck. And then I wonder, guys, like, given the history of the National Hockey League in the playoffs, what happens in the postseason? Defensemen get injured.
Yeah,
that's it.
Right? Yeah. And so far, the Canucks have been – I mean, I know Carson Soucy's hurt right now, and there's a situation with Guillaume Brisebois as well. But they've been really lucky injury-wise. Oh, geez, really lucky. Johnny. And I wonder if part of them, you know, part of the thinking with Alvin and Rutherford is this can't last. We have to make sure we have depth on defense. And maybe they go after defensemen. Maybe a puck-moving defenseman like you're talking about, Tom.
Well, and I think that's more my take than anything is, like, when you put Quinn Hughes with even Ethan Bear last year, and now Hronek's taken it to another level, you get a totally different set of outcomes from him. You know, if you lose a Carson Soucy, you have a Noah Juulsen, right? You have a Mark Friedman. Honestly, you probably feel comfortable with Christian Wolanin, and it takes you three injuries before you get there, right? But if you lose one of the top pair guys in ahead of a crucial game six, do you have a guy who can step up and replace something? No one can replace those guys, but at least allow you to play a similar way. You know, that's sort of as I'm raising the bar here and thinking, like, what would it be nice for this team to have in late May if they get there? That's sort of one thing that stands out to me. What do you think?
Yeah, for sure. I know what you're saying. If there's an injury, well, God forbid Hughes gets hurt, but who can possibly on that blue line do what he's doing? Nobody. You know,
not many.
Nobody
people,
in the world. No one in the league, really. I can say not many, but
well, no.
Yeah.
But Thomas, are those guys growing on trees at the deadline? Or a ton like of those guys
somebody
available?
Who plays similarly?
Yeah, I'm talking about
a similar game.
I'm talking about buying. I'm talking about buying like a bear type as insurance, as opposed to trying to replace those guys in full. You know what I'm saying? That like lower level guy, but who can at least plug in without causing you to have to change the entire style of that pair.
Speaking of all the UFAs, and you were listing
the phone,
just an idea.
You were listing them on the blue line, but it's also up front with Bluger and Joshua. Do you have a sense of kind of who's highest priority for them to retain? Because as you said, they're going to have to make some difficult decisions. They're not going to be able to bring all of them back, but I'm sure there's at least some they'd like to bring back, even if it's at a significant raise. Do you have a sense of kind of who's first on their priority list there, Rick?
No, you know what, though? I do know this. They're going to take their time with the UFAs. You're not going to see any signings today or tomorrow. The way it was told to me is they will address the UFAs at a later date. And there's so many of them. You don't even know what Pedersen's new deal is going to look like, right? You know, so there's so many things that factor. But for me, guys.
Joshua. Joshua.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to give you my top three. It's Zadorov, Bluger, and Joshua. Those are the three I think that's my wish list, Donnie, is if they can do the – I do know there's mutual interest with Zadorov. I told you guys that, you know, Milstein's looking for term, but there is interest definitely in bringing him back.
Well, especially if you lose Myers.
No, that's it. And you're going to need Myers' money to help, you know, sign some of these other guys that might all leave.
But I just like – and Bluger's got offensive upside, but what Joshua has shown offensively – those hands the other day in close, pretty impressive. The other thing I like about him is just how the season started for him when he was in the doghouse, and how much he's rebounded to the point where you're wondering if that third line, and he's important part of it, is the second line, and he's got that size, and I know he's going to get offers. I'm pretty impressed by him.
Well, and PK, look at his PK minutes, Donnie. Yeah, he's on the ice. He's on the ice late in games. The trust level with Tocchet, defensively, is with them. And when he goes to talk to his agent about a new deal, he doesn't have to go far because his agent is in White Rock, Rich Evans.
There you go.
You run into him once in a while on walks.
Well, I go on walks every
with
Saturday.
Your dog.
Yeah.
What's happening with your dog? Why don't you tell everybody?
He's good. Well, I'm not telling that, Donnie. Come on. Forget
Why?
About the dog. Listen.
Dude, no, I love dog talk.
You can't tease us with a dog update. We're not giving it to us.
This is a big dog-friendly show. That's a tough day.
He's getting neutered.
When?
So I was asking Donnie for the updates.
Today?
Nah, two weeks.
Okay, okay.
He's an Australian.
Right after Rick.
Australian Shepherd Mini.
Love it.
You guys got a package deal at the vet.
It's a tough day, man. It's a tough day when
four for one.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so I was asking Donnie. Donnie's the dog expert.
Yeah. It's a tough day when you pick your dog up from the vet after they get neutered. That's a tough one. I'll send you my tips, bud.
You feel for the guy. But Rich Evans, forget about the dog. Listen to me, Thomas. Rich Evans and I run into each other every Saturday.
What kind of dog does he have?
He's got a little poodle, a chihuahua, a poodle, or something like that.
Those are very different breeds.
Yeah, hard to tell them apart.
It's really small. It's really small dog. Really small dog.
Well, how many?
Do you know if Rich Evans' dog is neutered? Can we get the update there?
100% Rich Evans, come on. No. Man of science.
Check it out. Get back to us.
I'll get you an update.
I also need an update on how many cartwheels JP Barry did Dolly after Tyler Myers took on the entire Maple Leafs team on national television on Saturday. Oh. Hey, my goodness.
Good. Yeah.
And two of the guys he took on were J.P. Barry clients.
Amazing. Okay, well, so
that would be zero cartwheels.
Zero.
So maybe one fewer cartwheel.
He was going to punch out Tavares and Morgan Riley, which are J.P. Barry clients.
Right, that is
funny. And, you know, hey, I will tell you guys something. Tyler Myers, improved play, 20 minutes a night, tons of PK time. He's doing himself a lot of favors July 1st. And if you think you're getting him for $1 or $2 million, you're out to lunch. You really are.
Scoring. He's scoring this year, too. Anyways, we got to let you guys go. I think once we get to the dog neutering talk, that's a sign that we've hit our limit for today.
Leo. His name's Leo.
We didn't even talk about the helmets. Next week.
Next week, I'm sure. All the best to Leo. And we'll get the update, and we'll chat next week. Have a great week, guys. All right, thanks, guys. That is Don Taylor and Rick Dollywall from Donnie and Dolly. You can watch it every day, Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Czech TV. That was a good one. I liked that. Started with Rick getting mad about charcuterie boards and saying he wouldn't touch them if there were five laid out in front of him.
I suspect that's not true.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
There'd be like something
if
little
you had five
that you'd enjoy.
Distinct charcuterie boards. But you've got to find something.
You know, very much like Leo in 2 weeks. You can't reproduce that type of chemistry.
No. Stop it. Oh, boy. Anyways, lots to chew on there. It was, of course, also a Canucks game day.
Tom is so mad. Why are you mad? You didn't like that one?
No, I was looking at the TV. I'm not mad.
Okay. Did Fulham score?
No, Kevin Durant's on the go today.
Then you'll be mad.
Fair enough.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll hear from Rick Tocchet next. Keep looking ahead to the Canucks and the Blues. Jason Bukala joins us at 1 o'clock. More Canucks talk coming up here on Sportsnet 650.
Big opinions and good bets. It's the People's Show with Bick Nizar. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a little bit of a different mood, I would say, than a lot of the other intro music.
It's rights-free. What's the Coldplay song?
Clocks?
Yeah. Thank you. Do you remember where you were when you first heard Clocks at the age of 13 to 15?
No, I do not.
Well, I'll never forget it.
Oh, please, no. I don't want to hear that story.
No,
I don't want to hear that
there
story.
I was in an environment where I would never forget it.
Okay.
7 minutes in heaven.
All right. We'll leave it at that, and we will...
Whoa, man. What's this sound on the radio?
Trance's first spin the bottle night.
This is magic.
All right. Anyways, welcome back to Canucks Talk here, Sportsnet 650.
Also known as 7 minutes in heaven.
No.
7 minutes in heaven in that context is like, should we go to Subway?
Okay.
I have some knockoff Bob Marley if you want to... go in that direction.
Yeah, let's try that
actually
next time.
Let's try that next time. I'm curious to hear what that sounds like.
We should in honor of former Canucks GM Mike Gillis.
That's right. We should just go through like make a list of like iconic artists and just try typing them into the old database and seeing what we get and seeing what matches the closest. I'm excited for this now. We'll do it.
Yeah.
We are live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com.
shout out to Don Taylor and Rick Dollywell for joining us in the crossover. It is a Canucks game day. Let's hear. Actually, first, I do want to give a quick update. I mentioned it off the top. The Globe and Mail report, five players from the 2018 Canadian World Junior Hockey Team have been told by London police to turn themselves in connection with the investigation to allegations of sexual assault in June of 2018. London Police Services has announced they will hold a press conference on Monday, February 5th. To provide an update on the investigation. So still almost 2 weeks away, but Monday, February 5th, there will be official information given on this story by the London Police Services. That's the latest we have on this. Again, as there are further developments, we will pass them along to you. All right, let's hear from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet on game day today.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like not happy. I think it's just things to correct to get to where we want to go. It's more of that. You know, we gotta look for a 60-minute game. And there's a few things we just got to correct. And I think it's something that we've addressed, and you know, we got two games to get, you know, find our 60-minute game, and then we got a well-deserved 10-day break. I mean, I think our players need it, but we can't go on vacation yet. We still have two important games for us.
What are some of those things?
Well, I think the line changes have been a little loose, and I think our 50-50 battles when we, you know, we're diving in when we don't have the puck, and I think those, and you know, even for me, the turnover rate's been a little bit trending in the wrong direction. So if we clean up that, I mean, listen, you know, we're winning, we're finding games to win, but I still think we have to correct those three things. A couple of other things, but, you know, we're still getting really good forechecking from a lot of lines. We're getting some great, you know, when teams are pressuring us, we're protecting the middle of the ice, and we're always getting really good, you know, excellent goaltending. So, you know, there's positives too.
Thatcher going to rest tonight?
Casey's going tonight.
When you look at unsung heroes on this hockey team, yeah, you go with everybody in your bottom six, but Casey's play.
Yeah.
What's impressed you with what he's done with his minutes?
I group him with those other guys. They work. They spend time after practice with the coaches. They're in the video room. He's in that group. You know, and all the guys that have put the work in have improved their play. So, and he's one of them. You know, for a guy to not play 10 days at a time, to play the way he's had, I mean, it says a lot about his character. So, yeah, we're you know, that's a great trade we got for getting Casey here.
Rick, that's four just okay games for a lot of line. Do you think of maybe making some adjustments tonight?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure what to do tonight. We have our 12 o'clock meeting, but, you know, we could split them, which is fine. You know, maybe we'll put PD back in the middle, which I like him in the middle too. But I have no problem every once in a while putting this line back together again. We'll see how it goes.
Beyond Casey, any other lineup for the same skaters?
Same guys. Yep.
How do you try to keep the guys locked in for these last two games here before this 10-day break?
Well, for Coach, you're looking for the leadership group to really help us out on this, like to make sure they're ready to go, make sure they run the room. I think it's important. Sometimes coaches got to stay out of it, you know, in an 82-game schedule. I think this is one of them where, hey, you know, let the room, you know, I'm not taking myself out of the equation here. I'm just saying I think it's important that the leadership group run the room sometimes and run the attitude of the game tonight.
Rick, there's been you guys gotten off to a fast start in a bunch of games, and then it's tailed off, and then you just kind of struggle to hang in there and maybe come out with a win. What do you guys got to do to make sure there isn't that drop-off after a fast start?
Well, I think obviously we've had some unreal starts. I mean, like, you know, you sit back and watch the way we play. And I just think that, you know, whether we think it's going to be easy, whether it's hard to do it for 60 minutes, but if you want to be a high-level team, you got to do it for 60 minutes. So I think each individual has to worry about their game. How do I, you know, if I'm a 12-minute guy, how do I play 12, you know, hopefully consistent minutes, or an 18-minute guy? Like, how do I play consistently? It's just not, you know, every once in a while. So I think we're in that point, but I will say we have some guys that have played 60 minutes. It's just not everybody. We just have some other guys that have to make sure they play a 60-minute game for us.
Hockey Canada is in the spotlight this morning for all the wrong reasons, Rick. What do you feel about it in the sense that I know you prepare your players to be professionals on the ice, and I know you talk to your young players before the season starts. Is it education that's at the forefront of all this work?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I'm just going from my eyes. I mean, I'm lucky. I've got this team here, I got like outstanding an individual like team of players here. So and met their family. So I can't speak of the allegations and speculation. I honestly don't know about that stuff. I can only speak from my eyes, and you know, I'm lucky that I have a great group here.
Cal Foot has taken a leave from the Devils. Is that going to impact Adam in any way?
No, I mean Adam's he's standing tall, and can't say anything more than that. And you know, he's fine. He's good.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet speaking to the media ahead of the game against the Blues tonight. And somebody did text in asking about Adam Foote. Of course, Cal Foote taking a leave of absence from the New Jersey Devils. And you heard the update there from Rick Tocchet, not going to impact Adam Foote in his capacity as an assistant coach with the Vancouver Canucks. And, you know, as always, lots of interesting things in there from Rick Tocchet. Drancer, I think what most people will really zero in on is the commentary from the Lotto line, on the Lotto line, I should say, and really just, not even just about, you know, his assessment of their play, because, you know, he says just okay games kind of thing, but his overall philosophy, right, which is, hey, we could split them up, maybe we'll put Petey back in the middle, I like him in the middle, but then he also says, you know, we'll have the meeting, we'll decide. If we do split them up, I have no problem going back to them again every once in a while, right? So I think worst case scenario here from a Canucks perspective is you've tried something out and you've found an option and you've given yourself flexibility in the future, right? That you, when we talked to Rick about this in the crossover, they really, really like how strong they are down the middle. They have a bunch of guys in the lineup that can play center or can move on to the wing. And again, you've discovered an option that maybe it's not your first choice, and we'll see what happens at the trade deadline. But if you get into a tight spot in the playoffs, for example, and you need a goal, you have this in your back pocket now to go to at a certain point.
Yeah, it's just, this team has played its best hockey since uniting that line. Now, that line got united the same game that Carson Soucy returned, and all of a sudden you had this group of six defensemen that was Vancouver's best six.
Yep.
And when you look at what's driven Vancouver's best two-way stretch of the season, it actually hasn't been their offensive generation. I mean, they've generated a little bit more over the past month than they did earlier in the year in terms of scoring chance volume. But where they've really gone up a level is what they're permitting, which is just about nothing. Like elite defensive results, right? Third in the NHL, third best in the NHL in terms of limiting expected goals. You know, in fact, the underlying form has been better than the actual defensive results, in part because their goaltending hasn't been as hot 5-on-5. It's been spectacularly hot overall, and especially on the penalty kill, as it has been at various points of the season, especially the first 6 weeks of the year. So, you know, maybe it wasn't the Lotto line. Maybe what we were reacting to was what it looked like with this fully rebuilt Canucks defense all in the lineup.
Yep.
You know, we don't have a big enough sample. What we do sort of know is that big line got united. They made a week's worth of magic. And since then, it's been quieter around them, and they've spent a little bit too much time without the puck. You know, that's kind of where we're at. Look, if you put Pettersson and Miller together with Brock Besser, you are not going to get outshot large sample. I'm very confident about that.
Yeah.
But, you know, they haven't necessarily been at their best. I'd play it out. Team's been playing well overall. And I want to see what it looks like on the other side of the All-Star break when you know this team's going to be up for those two games against Carolina and Boston. To me, I can't overreact to this week of games. You know, you're home. Everyone's got travel plans. Mm-hmm. There's five All-Stars. You know, like, there's a lot of distractions this week.
Including all three of those guys.
Yeah, right. There's so many distractions this week. This week, to me, is not... I'm not reacting, period, to what we see this week. I'm going to be consistent with that, by the way, if they lose the next two games. Like, none of this to me is a big deal unless someone gets hurt, right? And that to me is what matters most. So you can split it and take a look at something else. I'm totally fine to experiment in this stretch, but I do want to see this team play with this loaded top line come on the other side of the All-Star break for sure. That's where I think we'll actually be able to learn more about the sustainability of their form.
I also think it's worth noting that, look, I have no problem if they go away from the lotto line tonight and go away with it for a stretch, although I would like to see it in those games after the All-Star break as well. But somebody texted in, you know, they lost that game in St. Louis. It was the next game that they reunited the lotto line that Taka did. And you remember the conversation coming out of that St. Louis game. It was, are the Canucks getting enough out of their top six? Is their top six doing enough, right? And it was, are Mikheyev and Kuzmenko or Mikheyev and Lafferty, whoever it was, you know, does Pettersson have good enough wingers that can complement his game? And who's the third guy that makes sense next to Miller and Besser? And it's worth noting that once you split up the lotto line, you're kind of right back at those questions. You know what I mean? Does Kuzmenko just slide right up and play with Pettersson again? Has he done enough to earn that opportunity? Does Mikheyev still really fit there? You know, who's going to be, is Pugh Suter a fit on the left wing with Miller and Besser? Like,
yes, yeah. Pugh Suter's a fit everywhere.
He is a fit everywhere, but is he the ideal perfect fit? You know, you're kind of just getting back to these questions that prompted you to put the lotto line together in the first place, right? Mm-hmm. And I still think that illustrates why going out and adding that extra top six winger, which can help you either in the lotto line configuration or splitting that up, it can help you answer a lot of those questions.
Well, I'm also happy to hear that the winger is the bigger priority, right? Like, I really think it needs to be emphasized firmly that, like, Gensel and Elias Lindholm are not the same caliber of guy.
Mm.
Right? If we're talking about that bona fide star tier guy, Gensel's almost the only one on the market who you can even talk yourself into it. Right? And I think he's been
at least that we know could be on the market.
Yeah, yeah. You know, no, other guys could move. But like the other guys, in terms of guys who are like leading every trade board being produced publicly, like, there's a different caliber of player there, even though Lindholm checks so many of those ideal fit boxes, right? Gensel's a materially different type of, like, top of the lineup piece, right? I mean, I'm trying to, like, come up with a good analogy here, but it's almost like the difference between, like, a real top line guy and, like, a guy who can play on the top line. You see what I'm saying? Like,
A guy who can tag along on the top line.
Or even more than tag along, be good,
mm-hmm.
but not necessarily a guy who can, like, drive those. Here's the example I'm going to go with from Canucks history, okay? It's the difference between Alex Burrows and Brendan Morrison.
All right.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, Brendan Morrison was a really good player, too.
Elias Lindholm's a really good player.
Yeah, yeah, I see what you're saying.
But Alex Burrows was, like, top 10 in goals for a four-year stretch at 5-on-5.
Right.
Like, it's just a different caliber of production relative to the league.
Yeah, that's fair. I will say the other tidbit from Dollywall I was glad to hear is that Sean Monahan, despite them scouting the Montreal game last night, which, by the way, just on the volume of scouts being there, the CHL Top Prospect game is happening in Atlantic Canada,
right, okay.
Correct? So I think there's a lot of people flying through Montreal and like, hey, we'll stop and watch the Habs. Doesn't mean they're also not scouting those players, but I was glad to hear that Sean Monahan is not on their list because that fit has not made a lot of sense to me. I don't see it. I like Sean Monahan as a player, but like the price, and I just,
you know where he's really good too? He's really good at the net front. I like Monahan. If he's going to cost a first round pick, I don't know that he's that guy. Here's the issue, I guess, that you'd bump into is, would you actually rather have him play center for you than Pugh Suter or Teddy Bluger? And I think the answer there is not a for sure yes.
Yeah. That's the thing. And I don't think it's a clear enough upgrade to justify what the price is going to be.
No, yeah, right? Definitely if it's a first, I'm with you. I like the player. I think he's been good value in Montreal. I wouldn't be shocked if he provides another team with good value. It's the fit's not neat, though, because while he'd only help the Canucks in one specific area, for me anyway, which would be he'd be a big body with good hands to throw at the net front on the power play. But, like, he's not right-handed, right? He's not... he's not a clear upgrade over what Bluger and Suter bring. So, yeah, I mean, I'm with you. That's not a perfect fit. It's not a shock to see that they wouldn't be hugely in on that, to be totally honest with you.
Yeah, it's not an ideal fit. There's other teams where you could see it making a lot more sense than I think it would for the Canucks. Okay, we will take a break. We will run through some other trade deadline season permutations with our guy Jason Bukala from Sportsnet and a former NHL scout. That's coming up next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Let's go.
I don't know about that. Was there like organ in there?
No, this is a reggae beat. Oh, lyrics. All right. Okay, we don't usually get lyrics here.
Maybe Damian Marley.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We're live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
If the Canucks get shut out tonight, I'm going to blame
this music.
Yeah. Just don't want to see them get stoned.
Is it knockoff Bob Marley or is it just reggae music? It's hard to tell. Totally, like, is there a difference between the two things?
It was Bob Marley and the Wailers.
Yes,
you're right. Well,
of course.
You asked. It's knockoff Bob Marley and the Wailers.
Can we get Stevie Nicks in the next one?
You can. You can have whatever you want, Thomas.
Well, thank you. That's not usually the response you give me.
650.
Okay, yes, it is.
32 excuses. That's usually what I get.
You need to quit it, man.
650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Have we forced Bukalo to be listening?
Yeah,
to
he's
this?
Been listening this whole thing.
That's unfortunate.
He's real mellowed out on
I would have wrapped it up a lot faster if I had known that. But now joining us from Sportsnet's NHL coverage and also a former NHL scout, he is our guy, Jason Bukalo. Jason, I apologize. I'm sorry. How are you?
I thought it was great. Like, I'm just kind of, I wasn't sure with the lead into the tune. Like, I wasn't sure. I heard organ. I heard a bunch of things,
right?
And I'm like, "What is this?" It got a lot better.
It was like gospel music that became reggae. Sure,
yeah.
Let's go. A very power of the gospel, Ben Harper vibes. Hey, Books, I want to ask you something because the Canucks have had a heater run of pro scouting hits in particular, right? Over the course of the past 12 months. So we won't include like Joshua because that's from the previous offseason. But, you know, last 12 months, you think about the Lafferty trade, the DeSmith trade, the Zadorov trade. You know, you think about the Hronek fit with Quinn Hughes. You think about Cole, Susie, Pew Suter, Teddy Bluger. I mean, you get that many useful contributors almost uniformly on pace for career years in a 12-month period. I mean, that's the sort of thing that allows you to improve far more than anyone could have reasonably expected the way this team has. What's interesting to me about it, Books, is the Canucks pro scouting department is fundamentally the same as it was under previous regimes. Like, the only new addition is Scott Young as director of player personnel. I mean, we all know Scott Young's highly regarded, but in your experience, when you get are you surprised at all for the same group to be getting such different results under new direction, or is that sometimes how it works?
No, that's definitely sometimes how it works. I'm happy you brought this up because I think this is a perfect example of how scouting staffs under certain types of strategy and direction, or perhaps having more voice in the room, because we've seen that in hockey circles before as well. I think that all of those things become a factor, and it's not so much that these people, like, these guys are NHL scouts for a reason. Mm-hmm. And I know that, you know, scouts they very rarely get compliments thrown their way. Like, the scouting industry very rarely does. I mean, occasionally, yes, but even when teams win Stanley Cups, it's, you know, you don't hear a lot mentioned about the scouting staff. And this is a great example of, clearly there's been a team effort and a message at the upper levels, obviously starting with the new president and a new GM. And then, you know, these guys have went out and found the players that they coveted. Or I would also suggest that, you know, they're getting listened to a little bit better or more, and they're having more impact. Mm. So congratulations to them. This is a great story. I mean, there's a lot of good things going on in Vancouver, and And it's the same on the amateur side. It's a perfect storm, fellas. Like, very rarely do you see a perfect storm in organizational buildouts. But in the last year and a half, two draft cycles, and then the pros, like, you've hit on some really high-end prospects in rounds, not just number one. And so the entire organization has been built up pretty aggressively in a short order, and it's a good news story.
When you have that recent track record of success as a scouting department, as a front office, right, identifying players, as you said, on the pro and the amateur side, and certainly on the pro side, bringing them in and instantly having them find success with your team and help your team, does it give you more confidence to go out and be aggressive at the trade deadline, right? Knowing that, hey, we've been able to identify players that work with our coaching staff, that work with our system. Should that make the Canucks more confident about going out and spending assets at the trade deadline this year?
You know, that's curious because, you know, my initial response is no. I don't think you change. You're not any more or less confident in, you know, being able to go. Like, there's going to be a strike out there. You know, there's going to be a swing and a miss. That's just the law of averages, yep. Right? Like, that's bound to happen. I mean, we all get that. But I don't think that it positions you one way or the other. These guys are pros. They're not going to get too high or too low. They're really proud of the process. They're really proud of the results. But I don't think you get... I mean, you're not sitting there pounding your chest thinking, okay, who's our next one, you know, and we're really confident that we can go and do that. I think that the next move that they make towards the trade deadline is going to be very curious because they're very interesting to follow because I can tell you from where I sit strategically that I believe that their prospects carry more value than their first round pick this year in the draft cycle, for example. So I believe that there's going to be teams asking for some of their prospects before they even ask for their first round pick. And it's going to be interesting to see what the strategy ends up being.
First of all, Jamie, don't ask the career amateur scout, can they afford to part with more futures because their pro scouting's been so good? You'll always get the same. No, definitely not.
Don't do it.
Secondly, you know, if you're talking about, so we had this discussion on, we've been having this discussion for months on this program. I wrote a column about it and a lot of Canucks fans actually, I think probably because of the messenger, didn't enjoy it. But I look at this team right now, Books, and I see, you know, Pettersson's 25, going to turn 26. Hughes is 24. Those are prime-aged guys, right? That's not a 21-year-old, 22-year-old superstar kind of guiding this, right? Demko and Besser, late 20s. JT Miller is going to be 31 when the playoffs start. I kind of see this team as not necessarily like a young upstart that's just found success and boy the next 10 years are going to be wide open. I kind of see this as like a mid-window contender that should probably be making moves with the next 3 to 4 years in mind given their success this season. Do you agree with that? And if you do, how should that impact their willingness to be aggressive ahead of the deadline this year?
I do agree with that, and I'll double down on it and suggest to you that with the cap going up and the fact that we've just personally gone through a very expedited retool, if you will, in Vancouver, it shows to you how quickly teams can do this if they're guided in the right direction and they hit on the right players. So given where they're at right now, I'm with you. I think it's a four-year type of maximum 5 years, but I'm going to lean 4 years just because it feels right to me right now that we really have to be in that go-for-it mode based on what we know today with what they have and what's on the horizon. But I will say this, guys, that the one thing that's really great news is let's just say, let's just throw it a name for examples. Let's say that Pittsburgh falls out and the Canucks want to go after Gensel. Okay. Let's just suggest that for a sec. And we have to make that fit financially. I get it. There's some moving parts and that might mean Kuzmenko going the other way and there might be a fit. But here's the thing. I believe that that's going to cost you somebody like Tom Willander. Okay, that's what I believe in my heart of hearts. And maybe a secondary pick, but certainly somebody in his ilk. They might ask for Lekkerimäki. I'm going to say no. They're going to say, we'll take Willander. And I'm going to actually say yes. And the reason I'm going to say yes is because of the Pedersen factor, backing that, you know, another defenseman on the horizon, right shot D, that I think is going to be able to play substantial minutes. That fits our cycle. It also fits that four-year window where he's going to arrive probably in the next 2 years. So I'm with you. I don't think this is an 8 to 10 year great story. I think that this is like a 4 year story with the main name, some of the main names that we're talking about, like, you know, obviously the JT Miller's at turning 31 here. Yep. And at playoff time. So yeah, I'm with you there. And plus you can't sleep on the league. Like, who knows where we're going to be a year from now? Mm-hmm. Injuries, all kinds of different things. Like, let's hit it when it's hot, and let's get after it right now.
Yeah, and, you know, Books, we've heard that the Canucks obviously would be very, very reluctant to part with Vilander or Lekkerimäki, and that makes sense. I mean, no team wants to trade their top prospects, the guys they've drafted in the first round the last couple of years. I guess, to me, the way I look at it is, you know, Quinn Hughes is under contract for 3 more years after this one at an extraordinarily team-friendly rate, right? So that, to me, really is, okay, what can we do in these next 3 years when we have the certainty and the value on Quinn Hughes? And I guess with Lekkerimäki and Vilander, it's the question I would have is, okay, yeah, they'll probably arrive in the NHL in those 3 years, but will they be really core contributors for you in those 3 years? And if they're not, does that mean it's, you know, acceptable to go out and trade them for a guy who can help you right now? What do you think about their timeline, not just for reaching the NHL, but for being potentially impact players for an NHL team?
So on Will, you know, with Willander, I think that he needs to go back to school for another year, and so that punts it down one more year. Then he comes out, he signs, call it a year from now at the end of his school. You know, depending on what's going on at the college level, you know, how good the team is, etc. But after the NCAAs, anyways, okay. So he probably burns a year, depending on scenario. So then he goes, starts the next year in the American League, needs a full year of seasoning there. We're talking, you know, a full 2 years. A full 2 years beyond this year before he straps on or he pulls on a Canucks jersey, you know, to attempt to earn a spot in training camp. That's my guess. I mean, it's a heavy lift to get to the NHL as a defenseman, even though he's elite. I just think that that's the most realistic. Could he do it a little bit earlier? Maybe, but I think that that's probably realistic. And Lekkerimäki, you know, probably sooner than that is my belief because of his element. And the fact that he's just competing so much harder up and down the ice, the element will allow him to arrive sooner. Probably some American League time next year, but I think that he probably gets some NHL games next year. But with Vilander, you know, that's the thing. Like, you look at that cycle on the back end. Hughes, what's his number going to look like, fellas? Like, we have to sooner, after next year, we got to start planning for that a little bit, don't we? Like, at 75, like, we have to look into our crystal ball. Hronek's going to get a raise. You know, I'd keep Zadorov if it fits. Soucy's signed for a couple of years. Like, I don't know. The core there is signed, and a couple of guys are going to be getting some raises. But Willander would fit the cycle coming in at that time in a couple of years. But I'm ready to win a Stanley Cup. I'm ready with this. I think this team can contend, and I'm ready to do whatever it takes right now to try and win a Stanley Cup. And I'm confident in some of our other prospects that we have in the cupboard.
Books, in terms of, you know, all of the Canucks UFAs, I mean, you brought up Zadorov, but 3 defensemen expiring, a lot of size there, 1 right-handed guy, bunch of forwards. I mean, guys who could score 20 goals and see their valuation spike incredibly. Who among the prospects in Vancouver's system would you be eyeing as graduate possibilities going into this summer?
So just on the back end alone, that could make a, like, play a role next year? Mm-hmm. Or you wanted, like, the whole landscape?
Yeah, I mean, the whole landscape, yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, on the back end, you know, guys that could get some games, you know, like, you got some fillers on the kind of the low end, you know, I'm still interested in Hirose. I still think McWard can play a certain type of a role, but we're talking fives and sixes here, guys. Yep. So we're not talking fours. You know, Pedersen, I'm interested to see if he ends up coming over next year. I'm not sure what's going on with that situation. But beyond that, really on the back end, we're going to have to look long and hard at filling the cover. Obviously, extending a couple of guys is ideal in my mind. I think Cole has more life in him still, but, you know, we're getting into that. We're creeping up on 35, fellas, so let's be aware of that, right? Like, you know, that starts to become a thing. So if I hit the ground running with, like, Hughes, Hronek, Zadorov, Soucy, I'm looking at maybe Cole. I guess you circle back on Myers to see where that's at, but I'm not so sure that that's in my strategy right now. I'm kind of, you know, sidebarring that for a bit. You know what's interesting in all this? Now that I really start thinking about, if Willander said, I want to come out of school, I wonder if he'd actually press for a job if not moved. So that's something that, if he's not moved, I wonder if that's something that we just kind of keep an eye on the side, too. It wouldn't be ideal. It might be too soon. It would be too soon. But, you know, stranger things have happened.
I'll throw a bit of a curveball at you while we're just looking at prospects in the system, because somebody texted in, if you had any news to pass along or update on Sawyer Mineau, who is one of the Canucks prospects out of the WHL in this most recent draft, defenseman, and what he's doing this year. I hate to put you on the spot, but as I said, listener question passed along I wanted to do the listener a solid and put to you, Jason.
Yeah, so Sawyer Mineau, like, the Seattle Thunderbirds were a wagon last year, yep. Right? And this year, Sawyer Mineau, his uptick offensively is pretty considerable game over game. Like, he's hovering right around a point a game. I don't have it right in front of me, but I would say he's over 30 points for sure. And he's played around 35 games, somewhere around there. What I do like about him is I find that his aggressiveness, his man-on-man, like, he's got more bite to him this year for whatever reason that I saw last year. And I think that his penalty minutes reflect that as well. Like, he's way up in his penalty minutes. Defending is, you know, a work in progress. And the thing with Sawyer is that he's not a poor defender, so I don't want anybody to get alarmed, but, you know, he needs weight. Like, he's trying to play aggressive and he's doing some good things and there's been an uptick offensively, but he's still only about $175, fellas. So he needs time and he needs strength and weight to further plane out his game. But on projection, 2 AD, I think he leans more towards the bottom of the lineup. Any type of secondary offense we could get out of him would be a bonus when he turns pro.
That's why you're the best, Books, man. Off the top, right, the report on Sawyer Mineau, third-round pick for the Canucks last year. We appreciate it. We'll do this again next week.
No problem, fellas. I'm in Moncton. I'll have an update on all the prospects for you for next week.
So
maybe
good.
We can circle back on some of these names.
Very exciting. Enjoy Moncton.
I will. Enjoy the run in Vancouver. Let's keep it going.
Yeah, absolutely. That is Jason Buchla from Sportsnet NHL coverage and also a former NHL scout before that. And as somebody texted in, we finally broke down Books. He's on Team YOLO. Let's go. I started pumping my fist when Books was like, I'm ready to win a Stanley Cup right now. It's like, yeah, that's right. Let's go.
I liked you asking, though, like asking the amateur scout, like, look, and should they be more willing to part with futures because they can fill it other ways? Like,
he's like, no, I want draft picks.
It's like, hey, Fox, how well guarded's the hen house? Very.
Remember the year, I think it was after they won the Stanley Cup, where the Avalanche, I don't know, they picked like once in the draft.
Yeah. It was amazing.
It's like, they're poor amateur scouts.
It was 2023. Yeah, no, the poor amateur scouts, they were like still partying in Montreal. It was amazing. That was honestly one of the coolest drafts I've ever seen. Like, just for an organization.
Because of the Avalanche. Yeah, we used all of it.
There was no question about it. Like, you could tell that they were kind of like, just like celebrating still, you know, like, just like, yeah, we're here, I guess.
Not a lot to do, but we'll show up and have fun.
Well, and you know, one thing to note there, right, is like, the Avalanche were so all in for what reason, right?
Nathan McKinnon.
The Nathan McKinnon contract.
Yeah.
The Nathan McKinnon contract required, just in terms of good strategy, for them to go absolutely all in on a very short window before McKinnon became, you know, and by actual salary, like a $16 million player, by cap hit, a $13-plus million player, right? So they drafted twice in 2022, in the sixth round and the seventh round.
That's incredible.
Right? The year before, though, they drafted four times.
Yeah.
I mean, they now, we talked about this when Rutherford first came in, right? That, like, I wasn't worried about him constantly trading firsts because I thought that showed mature situational awareness, given where Crosby was. You know, like, yeah, don't trade all your firsts. Kill all your firsts. You know, I still think one thing that we've gotten wrong over the years, like talking about the Mike Gillis draft record, is that the error isn't missing on Brandon Saad because you picked Brendan Gaunce. The error is picking Brendan Gaunce at all, picking anybody, right? The team was trying to build a forever window. And you know, to some extent anyway, I think cost themselves at least in part, you know, putting their best foot forward, except for 2010-11. You know, I'm not saying the Canucks should pick six times in the next 2 years necessarily, but I do think you can at least consider it.
Well, it's not a perfect analogy to where the Avs were, but it's not far off when you consider that Pettersson's expiring this year, that Hronek's expiring this year, and then you have the 3 years of Hughes.
For me,
after
it's
this
the Hughes Demko thing.
Yeah.
It's you've got three runs with Hughes and Demko at $12 million. Do you think Hughes is the best or second best defenseman on the planet? I say yes. Do you think Thatcher Demko goes 950 for 2.5 months in him type playoff run? I say yes. Well, if you have those two guys at $12 million, you at least have to weigh it. At least have to strongly consider it.
And your point about the Gillis regime trying to create this forever window, right? And you know, we've seen other iterations of this. Teams talk about it, right? Like the Golden State Warriors. Oh, we're going to be light years ahead of the rest of the NBA, and we're going to defy all of the natural things that happen that drag teams down to the rest of the pack. Lo and behold, no, you're not, actually. You can be the smartest team in the league, and it's still impossible to do that. There's always this temptation to, hey, we're going to hit both things at once, right? We're going to compete for the Stanley Cup this year, and we're going to have this extremely well-developed prospect pipeline, and we're going to keep cycling these guys in on ELCs. So when our core players are expensive,
everyone wants to be the Patriots.
Greg, the dairy farmer, texts in, you also need high value ELCs when the whole core is signed if you want to extend the window. So you are robbing Peter to pay Paul if you go too aggressive. To me, it's a 3 year window max if we trade our future away. But to me, the way I would look at it is a 3 year window is pretty good. A three-year window is nothing to sneeze at. Like, that's the three-year window. You should be going extremely aggressive on it because it's so hard to create a window, a meaningful window that's longer than that. If your goal is to create a 10-year window around Elias Pettersson, good luck. That's phenomenally difficult to do. Go in on this three-year window that's staring you in the face right now.
You could be trying to have a forever window and still have a three-year window.
Yeah.
Right? There's risks either way. Like, that's... The Rutherford's formulation was dead on, right? There's risks to going all in. There's risks to not going all in, right? You're going to be taking on some risk either way. Well, I think the sort of some of the framing, at least, that I would use here would be, you know, you are going to rob Peter to pay Paul, right? So you have to make sure that Peter's getting enough value for what you're taking from Paul, right? So... You know, in my view anyway, you cannot consider trading a Volander, Lekkerimäki quality piece for one run, right? If you're trading a guy who could be that ELC, maybe even like if not star level, like could Lekkerimäki, Owen Tippett has always been my comp.
Yep.
Well, guess what? Like, you know, if Lekkerimäki is 80% of Owen Tippett in 4 years, like, man, you want that player relatively cost controlled that season with a highly paid core. You don't give that up lightly, but if you can find a guy who like levels you up for a 2 or 3 years, like if you get multiple playoff runs, if you get another Hronek type guy who gives you another gear in your ceiling, I absolutely think this organization has to consider that.
Absolutely.
And where I think you don't want to be is in that middle tier. Like where I think you don't want to be is chasing maximum playoff appearances at the expense of taking the big swing.
Yeah. You're right, because you can extend your window to battle for the playoffs for a long time, right? Teams have done that almost in perpetuity. You can do that. Are you ever going to have really legitimate shots at the playoff, at the Stanley Cup, though? And that's what the Canucks have this year. They've jumped. They went straight from being an also-ran in the playoff race you know, I think the plan was, okay, we'll take those gradual steps and then battle for the playoffs and then become a contender. They just skipped a bunch of steps in the middle, but you got to recognize that that's where you are now, right?
It does feel like the seas are parting in some ways, and yet, you know, I still don't think you want to give up. You don't want to take too much from Paul for a rental, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, to me, it's wide open, right? We talk about how it's wide open, but that's a double-edged sword. It's wide open, which means you have a chance. It's wide open, which means
a lot
your
of
first round opponent's going to be good.
Yeah.
You know, like it, and you're not the overpowered team either.
Yeah.
Right? Which the Avs really were those 2 years. Like, if you think the Canucks have a 5% chance, which is roughly what Dom's model would say, like those Avs teams had a 25% chance, 28% chance at this course of the season. That's the sort of thing you absolutely buy. Like the leverage of every bit of marginal improvement to your roster is through the roof. You know, it's not nearly as high yet for this Canucks team. So that's worth, look, it's one of those of two minds ones.
It's a fascinating situation.
It's fun.
It really is. Like, and it's
so much more fun than who are they going to sell and who are they going to extend before.
Well, and
the
it's
deadline.
Just so, and we'll take a break here in a second, but it's so, even for contending teams, it's not the path we're used to seeing, right? Which I think opens it up to a bunch of extra debate and all these factors to consider, because it is different. They got here in a different way than a lot of teams who are in their position in the standings at this time of year did, and that creates this really interesting dynamic about how to manage things going forward. We will take that break now. The whiteboard coming up in the final segment of the show, so stick around for that. It is Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650.